at center and coming in as Lube. Hewitt-Dyke center net.
From point blank range.
You can put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames Talk on a Friday. It's September 30th, coming at you from our Sportsnet 960 downtown studios. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Preseason rolls on for the Calgary Flames. Four down, four to go, including Friday's game at Rogers Place in Edmonton. Preseason game five for the Oilers, for the Flames against the Oilers. It's actually preseason game four for Edmonton. And we'll see some real interesting wrinkles in that lineup for Calgary when they take on Edmonton. A busy hour two coming your way, including a little bit of a deeper dive on some of these blue line battles for the Calgary Flames. But first, we kick off hour two by saying hello to Sportsnet's Eric Francis. It's Francis Fridays. Hello, sir. How are you? I told you, I didn't see you at the Dome on Friday morning, so like I'm a little cranky today as a result.
You're funny. Yeah, I
think the word you're looking for is creepy or disturbing.
Yeah, you're a weirdo. That's all. No, I'm looking forward to the game tonight. It's not as much fun watching it on a stream as opposed to a TV, but I do find these games interesting. I mean, I don't think they've been very entertaining, but that's not really what the preseason's all about. It's all about trying to, you know, learn a little bit more about some of these guys knocking on the door. And I don't know, Pat, you tell me, if the season started tomorrow, are you signing Milano?
Nope.
How about Eakin?
Nope. You?
I'm not. And, you know, but to be fair, we're going to give him another four games. You know,
exactly.
I don't think Milano looks out of place or anything, or Eakin. But you know what? I'll go down the list. Are you signing Stone?
In some form or another, yes.
Okay, that's a great answer, and I 100% agree. He's going to be with the organization. I think the only question is, does he want to play with the Wranglers, or would he rather just, you know, sit around and wait for a phone call that will inevitably come when injuries hit and they sign him to a two-way deal there? I don't know. I haven't really pulled him aside to say, look, and I don't think it's appropriate even to ask him this at this point in time. Do you get the feeling that he would sign a two-way deal, which would mean he was going to play with the Wranglers all season long?
Well, here's the theory that I floated earlier this week, because listening to him talk with Aaron Vickers, and it was Cammy at Global, they stuck around late with him on Wednesday after the game where he scored the goal, and Cammy basically asked, like, would you play anywhere else? And he said, yeah, at this point, probably not. Just the way things are right now, kids are starting school, probably not. I'm probably not playing anywhere but with the Flames organization. So in knowing that, and I don't really feel like the Flames should take advantage of that per se, but it gives you some flexibility. And if Stone is not going to be on your everyday roster or in your every night lineup, well, maybe you sign him to an AHL-only deal, similar to what they have with Brett Sutter. Have him playing games with the Wranglers, and then when it looks like he can still essentially be your number seven defenseman, and then when you need him to step in, then you sign him to an NHL contract and you put him onto the roster then. That's one of the things that I floated. I don't know whether or not Michael would be all right with that, and I'm really not trying to disparage or insult the guy at all, because he may very well earn an NHL contract out of this camp, but if for whatever reason they're really dead set on keeping like Mackey and Milosh, they're worried about losing a guy on waivers, and Stone's not going to be an everyday NHLer to start the regular season, maybe that's a way for him to get a high salary. You can give him a high AHL number at $450, you can, or more. You can get him playing games, have him be a leader with the Wranglers, and still have him be a factor on your team. So that's just one of the things that I've got kicking around my head if it ends up going that way.
And not stats that he won't play anywhere else. That goes back years. I mean, and the organization's always known that. And I like to think that they haven't. You're right. You don't want them to take advantage of it. But I think he's the ultimate insurance for that right, that for the right side if they need him. Right. I mean, I just think that he's done everything you could ask for so far in the preseason. A couple of goals. I think he's played very well. I just don't think the coach loves him. But I think the coach loves that he doesn't have to worry about him. He knows what he is, and he's, you know, and he plays that role really well. I think he's so popular in this city, and I know everybody wants him to be signed. I don't see why you would sign him to anything other than a two-way deal or a Wranglers deal. I just, again, the question, what do you want to play in the AHL? I don't know if he would, but we'll find out. Yeah. I hope it doesn't come. I'd love to. We all want good things for Michael Stone, that's for sure.
I really hope that it. I hope it works out for him in whatever way that works for him. I really do, because such a good dude, such a consummate pro, and a great story on top of all of that. The problem is that this is the deepest Flames blue line that they've had. I floated this to Vickers earlier this week. I'll bounce it off you too. Is this the deepest blue line they've had since that 09-10 season? Remember going in to 2009-2010, Bollmeister, Regier, Phaneuf were still on the team. We thought all three could be on Team Canada for the Olympics, and definitely at least one of them. Now, it turns out none of them ended up making that team. But that was going into that year, we thought Calgary was absolutely stacked on defense.
Yes, and I remember being at Brett Sutter's farm the day that they acquired the rights to negotiate with Bollmeister. And, you know, here you got this guy who's going to inherit this incredible trio of defenders. And he was so excited. And it was just, anyway, hey, those guys are great. Didn't pan out the way everybody expected with them, albeit on Team Canada. But that's funny that you remember it exactly the same way I do. Now, I don't know if they had the depth. They certainly had star talent, but they didn't have the depth this team has, no question. And you know what? I wrote, I don't know, about a week ago, the fact that if the season starts tomorrow, there's a name in the lineup that nobody's ever heard of in Calgary, and that's Meloche.
Yep.
I'm telling you, that's the way this. If the season started tomorrow, he'd be your sixth defenseman. Now, that's because Oliver Shillington's not here, and he's next man up on that right side. And I think he's an interesting story. I know the Sun followed up and did a column just like I wrote the other last week. But, you know, they told him, you're the next Gudbranson. You know, Gudbranson was 6'4", 220. This kid's 6'3", 211. Pretty close. And he plays a similar style. And he said, they said to me, we want you to be the next Gudbranson. They sent me a whole bunch of tape. And I spent the summer watching nothing but Gudbranson shifts and learning how to be the next Gudbranson. And it's not a bad idea. If that meant his next contract was anything like the one he signed this summer, it'll serve him very, very well. So, yeah, Meloche would be their sixth defenseman if the season started tomorrow. And, you know, I think people will be interested to see how he would fare alongside Zadorov.
I'm just going to bounce off the D-man that played that year for the Flames, by the way. So it was the three that we talked about. Some guy named Giordano was just starting to become a big thing. He actually led all defensemen in scoring that year with 30 points. So Gio, Jabo, Dion, who got that only lasted like 3 months because Dion got traded that year. And then Regier. Then they kind of had a mishmash from there. They had Adam Party play a bunch of games. Ian White played some games before Corey Saric played most of the games, but had some injury issues that year. So they had a number of different guys who kind of came out in and out on the third pair. But the top four was Regier in some combination, Regier, Gio, Phaneuf, and Bollmeister.
Man, that's pretty good, eh? And how'd they do that year? Remind me, how'd they do in 09-10? How far did they go? Did they go to the final that year? I can't remember.
What a beating. What a beating your footing. They missed the playoffs.
Yeah, that's all. I'm not throwing shade on anybody. I'm just saying it's funny how.
I know.
And Pat, I got to wonder this. I said this a neighbor, literally those conversations you have with a neighbor. He's like, hey, how exciting is it this year down at the Dome? And I said, hey, don't get, like, for sure, tons of intrigue, tons of excitement. You know, one of the most fascinating teams in the NHL going into the season this year. But it was the first time I said to myself, like, there's so much excitement and such high expectations. I'm now at the point where I'm starting to wonder about that, right? When, like in 09, 010, the reason I bring it up is because look at the expectations on that team back then. You know, they didn't even make the playoffs. Hey, this is a better team than that team on paper for sure. But it's funny how teams on paper don't always pan out in the standings the way they're supposed to, right? I'm not saying it won't happen. Hey, I still think they'll be in a battle right to the end for this division. But expectations are a funny thing. There were no expectations, very low expectations last year on this team. This year, that dialogue is flipped tremendously. The script has been flipped. Expectations are sky high inside the city, around the NHL for this team. And that puts a whole different type of pressure on this team. Like, Pat, what if this team leaves, you know, those first 10 games? We know they play 9 at home. What if they come out 5-5 or with a losing record, which could easily happen? Look, you open against Colorado, and then you go to Edmonton for game 2. Like, you could easily start 0-2. Then, you know, you just start to wonder, would the pressure mount if you got off to a slow start? I'm just playing devil's advocate and throwing it
out. I know the guy taking phone calls after the games would be saying, be patient. It might take some time for this group to come together. That's just the dummy taking calls after the game on the radio station and on the podcast. But that's what that person would be saying, I think.
Yeah, and hey, in the room, they don't care what the expectations are. And they have high expectations in that room, no question. It's just what I said earlier. It's going to be a fascinating year. I don't think they're done. I would be very surprised if this general manager doesn't bring in a right winger before the season starts. I really would.
How do you do that?
We used to say, how do you sign Nazem Kadri?
And they it's not even like, oh my goodness, they can't do it. It's just like, how would you go about doing that? Because I think they could. Would you be trading a D-man? Would you be like, would you be trading picks? How would you go about doing that?
Yeah, you got 10 D-men on one-way contracts, and that's exactly, you know. But the problem is, you know, the guys, the four bottom guys on that list, I wouldn't exactly say they're sought after. And plus, teams also know that several of these guys are going to be made available on waivers sometime soon. So if they're really interested in any of these guys, they can hold off and wait. So I'm not sure you can trade from the blue line to address your problem on the right side. And I'm not sure money would solve the problem either. I don't know how they do it, but I'm not sure anyone thought Treliving would have been able to do what he's done so far to position this team the way he has. So
very fair on that front.
Who was it that the Calgary Flames, my memory, as you know, is terrible and yours is a steel trap. Who was it that the Calgary Flames stole from the Edmonton Oilers after he was in Edmonton on a PTO?
Versteeg.
Versteeg, our buddy Versteeg. He had a pretty good camp at Edmonton, and then the Flames signed him right after that. Like, that can't happen very often. But, you know, maybe there are scouts watching all these games, and maybe there is another guy on a PTO who somebody lets go of, and the Flames snap up. I don't know.
Interesting to see how that one plays out. And there's still 4 games to go preseason-wise. Maybe, you know, Milano admitted Friday morning that, you know, he needs to step it up. His offensively, he just has not been as good as he knows he can be. So Milano knows he needs to be better. Ruzicka's getting this chance to play with Huberdeau and Toffoli against Edmonton. You know, maybe he starts to pop a little bit more. There's still time for some of these conversations to evolve, too. We're just a little under 2 weeks from the start of the regular season, which is lots of time in the hockey world.
Yeah. Lots can change and, you know, Milano's the guy you'll be watching the most tonight, I would assume. You know, he's the guy that it's amazing, as deep as this team is and as good as they are, I still believe goals are going to be at a real premium. I asked Sutter about that at the beginning of the year. He goes, absolutely they are. Like, I know they replaced those 2 big goal scorers with 2 pretty good ones, but the exchange didn't work out that good for the Flames when you calculate the goals that you lost and the goals you brought in. there's a gaping hole on this team on that second line right wing. I wouldn't be surprised if Dylan Dubé was able to fill that role at some point, or Blake Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's a lot of – I think if the season started and you don't sign Milano or Ekin or any of these guys, I don't think there's any question you'll see a Coleman on that second line, or ultimately a Dubé, who I think is ready to take that next step. I really do. I think he's looked really good in these preseason. Like, the speed, he's a jitterbug out there. I really think he's ready. So it's not really the second line winger job that I think people should be worried about. It's really more of a third line, because someone from that third line is going to bump up to the second line and fill that role.
And I still want to see, whether it's Milano or anybody else, but specifically Milano, I'd like to see him get a game or two with Kadri. That's something that I'm still waiting to see is I want to see, because that's kind of where we earmarked him, especially after day one and two of practice. I want to see that play itself out and see what he's, no knock on some of the guys he's been playing with, but hasn't played with those bona fide NHL drivers yet. And I still want to see that, because I see Milano as a guy that can ride shotgun if he ends up making this team or getting a contract on this team.
Yeah. And, you know, I keep reminding people, like, I think people are shocked Milano was looking for a job and all that because of the, you know, the opening half of the season last year he had with Zegras and Raquel. But I keep reminding everyone, last 27 games of the year, he got 3 goals. Like, he did disappear. He didn't continue to build on what they were building with that line. It got worse, you know, like, so, and maybe they moved those guys around a little more than I'm aware of. I don't know. But at the end of the day, there was never any cinch that Milano was going to be the answer. Anyway, open mind. We go into with the last 4 games, and we see he'll probably play 3 of them, and we'll see how he fares.
Eric Francis with us, Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. As I was getting ready for the show today on this Friday, I came across just on Twitter, if you know how Twitter sometimes shows you something that's a minute old, or then the next one is 22 hours old. So I came across one from yesterday that just happened to be written by Eric Francis of Sportsnet.ca. It was about one of the most frequent topics we've talked about. You know, I've been saying for about a little bit more than a month now that, like, I'm pretty sure that this is going to get done between the Flames and Mackenzie Weegar. Everything that I have been able to ascertain from those that I've talked to that are familiar with the Weegar side of things and those that are familiar with the Flames side of things, like, my belief is, yes, there is a desire on both sides to get something done. We've heard Brad Treliving say publicly things to that effect. Mackenzie Weegar has said things to that effect, but you spoke this week to Matt Ebbs, who is Mackenzie's agent. And again, very much the same thing. Everything is pointed towards both sides wanting to get something done.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the news hook out of that story was the fact that the agent and Weegar have kind of let the Flames know, listen, we don't really want to talk once the season starts. Now, there's a significant difference between that and what, like, say, Johnny Gaudreau did, which was Johnny said, I will absolutely not speak once the season starts. You know, they said our preference is to not talk once the season starts. So they really would like to get this done and really don't want it to be a distraction for the team or the player once the season starts. I actually don't think it's a bad move for the agent and the player to say, full stop, I'm not talking once the season starts, because it puts some pressure on you to either jump or not. You could still change your mind. If the right number came along, you could say, oh,
well, that's kind of what I said. it's October 20th and McKenzie's playing, but Tree calls the agent and says, hey, Matt, I'm willing to go to here. Do you think, I'm not bringing that to my client. It's after the deadline. I don't think it's as hard a deadline. If Tree would have gone to Lewis Gross last year and said, hey, I'm willing to go 8 times 20 to Johnny, you think Lewis Gross would have been like, nope, we said not in the season. I can't give that to him. Like, I think that there are exceptions to rules in this case.
For sure. And again, he's new in town. You don't want to ruffle any feathers. You certainly don't want to negotiate through the media. But I appreciated the agent, who also happens to be his uncle. It's his only client in the NHL.
So Matt Ebbs is the uncle. Okay. I knew there was some connection because I know he's an Ottawa guy. He's got an Ottawa law firm. So I was like, okay, well, there must be a connection of McKenzie growing up in Ottawa, but I didn't know there was a family connection. Interesting.
Yeah. Thanks for reading the article. So anyway,
I read the quotes. That's what I read. Yeah. I read every single one of his quotes.
Yeah. Good on you. The comparables are interesting. And, you know, the Justin Falk deal, which is 7-year, $45 million, $6.5 million a year. That was 2 years ago signed. Yeah. And then the other one is Hampus Lindholm. He signed at $6.5 a year, another 8-year deal. You know, but it's interesting because Lindholm's numbers pale in comparison to Uyghur's the last couple of years. As we all know, Uyghur only in the last 2 years has put up significant, you know, offensive numbers and has really come into his own. Lindholm has gone the other way. He had a couple good early years and has been, you know, struggling to stay healthy and be productive over the last 5 years. But he's still got $6.5 million. So I think it's an easy argument to say you deserve more than $6.5 million based on Lindholm. Another comparable that's out there is Dougie Hamilton. I'm not buying it. That's $9 million a year. Dougie Hamilton's put up a point per game. Like, that's just a different animal to me, and I don't like that comparable at all. But
And he was UFA. Like, he actually got to the market.
Well, but this is the risk. If you say to the Flames, we're not talking once the season starts, well, then you've got to be prepared for the pot. And again, they didn't do that. But if you did that, you got to be prepared to watch this guy light it up this year. Hey, that's what happened with Gaudreau, guys, right? Gaudreau wasn't worth a nickel after the previous two seasons he just had. There was no way the Flames were interested in signing him for any of this money he was talking about. And then he said, nope, I'm not going to talk all year. It was a brilliant move by Louis Gross because then Johnny went out and just so happened to have the career of his life, like a career year.
Yeah.
And of course, then you got very little chance of signing him for anything less than market value. So you could sit here and watch Uyghur. Uyghur had some pretty damn good numbers the last 2 years. Each of the last 2 years, he's only had 3 power play points in each of those last 2 years. No defenseman in the top 40 in scoring in the NHL has had as few as just 3 power play points. Like, it's amazing. So Sutter's talking about trying him on the power play. If he tries him on the power play and he adds to the numbers he already has and he's going to play with Tanev, like, this guy could have a crazy big year. And then maybe Dougie Hamilton's number isn't that ridiculous. So that's the dangerous game you play by not just maybe overpaying a little now. But if you're the Flames, you also want to watch and see how he does this year, because what if he's not that good a fit? Maybe it's not it's a lot tighter in the West. It's a lot chippier in the West, a lot more physical in the West. Maybe that's not his game. I think it is. But anyway, there's a lot going on.
Well, here's the question. Like, would you sign him right now?
Here's why I'm going to say yes. Because you're the general manager. You stuck your neck out. Everybody saw this trade, which once you signed Huberdeau, everyone's like, oh, my God, it's one of the greatest trades of all time. If you didn't sign Huberdeau or if you didn't sign Uyghur, people are like, that's one of the worst trades of all time, right?
The
trade all hinged on whether or not you'd be able to sign at least one of them. Now, the pressure's off because you signed the big fish. You overpaid significantly, but you've signed him. You just took the money you earmarked for Johnny and you gave it to Johnny. Now you sure look good as a GM if you could sign both of them, right? And I'm not saying the GM would do it just so that he looks good, but I think it's a whole lot easier to sign it when at the end of the day everyone heralds you as, oh my God, you made this incredible trade when you had no leverage and you signed both guys, like, deal of the century. So I think that the GM would really, really look good, and it's what I think would put him over the top. Again, with those numbers and comparables I just gave you, he's worth more than $6.5 million a year. And I don't think anybody really thought that when they acquired him, that they were going to have to pay that much. Look, it was only a couple of years ago they were signing guys like Hanifin and Anderson to deals right around $5 million. Well, now, for a top four guy, you're looking at, you know, upwards of $6.5-$7 million, especially with the cap expanding next summer. So, anyway, shorthand, I'd get it done, you know, put the distraction aside, deal with the consequences later, but at first I think people are just going to think it's a genius deal.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I would do it tomorrow. I would do it in a week's time, all of that. I just think it's important to get done. And we'll see.
Again, sorry to interrupt, but
no,
we,
go ahead.
We don't know. We don't know if, like, with all those comparables, I think they want a little more than 6.5, but how much more? Like, if it's 7 a year, you know, I think that's where it starts to get into a real gray area, and you say, whoa, 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 we're going to give you 8 years. Let's go 6.5 and call it even, you know. It depends how much more than 6.5 they want. Easy for us to say just sign him for 6.5. I don't think he would sign for 6.5. I think he wants more than that.
I hope they get it done, because I do think it would make for a really cool story about, you know, oh, Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar come here. They wanted to stay in Calgary. They signed big deals. I think it would be a really good end to what was a really good feel-good story over the summer. And I do still think it's going to get done between, yeah, I mean, whether it's between now and the start of the regular season or not.
And the other thing that came out in that article was talking to Mackenzie, and he said all the right things since day one, but, you know, once he got over the shock of being told that he was traded, you know, he now sees it as a blessing in disguise now that he's here, now that he already likes the city, now that he's bought a pickup truck, his girlfriend likes it here. Like, you know, like, he's Albertan now, man. You just need the contract to solidify it and a cowboy hat, and he's done. He's here for the next 7-8 years. So it's important to note that he really wants to be here. Huberdeau is one of his best friends. You know, he wants to be with an organization that wants him, same as Huberdeau. You know, there's a lot of reasons why I don't have any doubt that he sees this as a really good fit.
I do remember that part of your article.
Oh, thank you. Nobody reads past the first 4 or 5 graphs.
No, I read the whole thing, but I'm like, you're slamming through prep, so like you read it, and but you're not like diving in full in and dissecting every single word. I miss the uncle part. I apologize, and you know, I hope you punish me in some form or another.
No. It's not like you missed out on a Pulitzer Prize winner. I appreciate you clicking on it at all.
Before we let you go, Pizza Pig Out is, less than a month away.
Yes, thank you. October 27th. Tickets are selling. It's exciting. You don't have one for 2 years in person for obvious reasons. You wonder if people forget about it, but tickets are selling pretty quickly. And we have an early bird special right now. If you go to ericfrancispizzapigout.com or just Google Pizza Pig Out Eric Francis, whatever, you'll find it. And, get there. We're going to have, you know, last time it was live, we had over 800 pizzas. Like, 800 pizzas. Like, that's pure gluttony and joy for a lot of people. And there's gluten-free pizza. There's every type of pizza you could imagine. There's stuff with... We've had reptiles on pizza before. They're dead. They're cooked and stuff. But it's you never know what you're going to find at the Pizza Pig Out. So come check it out. Find a new pizzeria that you want to start ordering from, and support the Kids Sport Calgary. And thank you for doing the auction the other day, the Tammy Truman luxury box for the Stamps game. That's $1,500 for us that we didn't have yesterday. So thank you.
If only Tammy would help out with the community a little more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Never gives back to this city. Love that woman. And just
she's an amazing woman.
Quickly before we wrap up, I think Vickers, give us the review on the peanut butter whiskey that we didn't get.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I was sitting here teeing up a one-liner if Francis ever mentioned my name. And it did and it did revolve around the sheepdog peanut butter whiskey. And you know what? I don't think he's earned it. I will say it gets full marks. But he doesn't get the one-liner.
No one-liner? I wanted to hear it.
Do you really?
Why? You just wanted me to hear you say your name?
It's all I ever want, buddy.
Vixie. You're funny. Vixie, what? Come on.
I'm a bad influence on everybody. Literally everybody.
I was just hoping that you'd be like, hey, Vickers, you've been pretty quiet. And I was going to be like, I even typed it out so I wouldn't mess it up. Read it off a script. Perfect cue. I'm just over here, shirt off. No, shoes off, feet up on the desk, cigar in one hand and a sheepdog peanut butter whiskey in the other.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Trying to convert people into peanut butter whiskey fans. It's not hard.
No, it isn't.
Itself.
Delicious stuff.
It is delicious. I'll get you another bottle soon.
Promise?
Yeah, promise.
Are you going to pay for this one or is your wife?
I paid for it. Oh, yeah. She's going to lend me money again. Don't worry.
Bye, Francis. Good article on Mackenzie Weegar. I encourage everybody to read through.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, thanks, boys. Have a great weekend.
You're the best,
Eric. Sheepdog.
Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Francis Fridays. And he joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner for takeout or delivery. Call 403-248-3344 or dine in at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast.
Flamestock is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Big Friday night for a couple defensemen on the Flames as hour two rolls on. Flamestock's on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Aaron Vickers, Daily Hive, Pat Steinberg, along with you from our Sportsnet 960 downtown studios. Michael Stone, Nick Melosh, Connor Mackey, Yusuf Alamaki, all playing against the Oilers in Game 5 of the preseason. A huge evaluation tool against the Oilers lineup that's going to be on the ice. McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, Hyman, Yamamoto, Puljujarvi, Kane, Nurse, like, and Campbell in net. Like, they're going, I would say, 85-90%. Fourth line, I would say four of the starting 20 are not in the lineup.
I would evaluate it as the fourth line's probably not the fourth line you're going to see, but the top three lines are probably five of six defensemen and the starting goalie. So full meal deal, as Peter Laborduis likes to say from the Edmonton Oilers. Almost.
Almost the full meal deal. Exactly. So a really good opportunity to gauge some of Calgary's defensemen. Is this the last chance for Valimaki? Is this a... I liked him in the early stages of camp. I thought he looked quicker than he has. I thought he looked lighter than he has. But the last preseason game Tuesday in Seattle, maybe not his best outing. Is this a big one for you, so playing with Nick Melosh on his right?
It's massive for him. I don't necessarily know if it's his last crack at exhibition games this preseason, but he's running out of runway with the Calgary Flames in general. He's one of the players that's going to require waivers should he not crack the opening night roster, the 22 or 23-man roster. And if the Calgary Flames want to assign him to the Wranglers, send him across town to Winsport, he's going to need to be one of those players that's going to hit that massive onslaught of 100, 150 players that hits waivers. And if there's another organization that's been eyeing him, well, there's a chance that this is his last 2 weeks with the organization if he doesn't show that he is either A, ready for a full-time role, or B, worthy of more consideration. Tonight's going to be huge. You mentioned it. He does look faster. He does look quicker. But at the same time, he still, to me, looks like he's second-guessing himself a little bit in some of his decisions. I don't necessarily know the confidence level is there for him where we've seen it. You go back to a couple years ago before all the injury trouble that he's had, and he's had massive, massive injury troubles the last couple of years. But as a 19-year-old, as a 20-year-old, man, did he ever look confident. Looked like he knew exactly what he was going to do with the puck every time he had it, was making plays that, you know, you look and you go, well, a guy lacking confidence isn't going to make that play. So, yeah, we're running into a situation where this is going to be an excellent showing for him, excellent showcase, rather. And then I guess the outcome is going to determine where we see him?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that you could potentially make the argument that a change of scenery could be good for him because it has been, I even remember talking to him last week, when he said, when I really kind of digested it all and really started to unpack what has happened over the last 2 years, significant injury in the summer of 2019, then a pandemic shutdown, then the time in Finland during the pandemic, then back here, and that shortened season didn't go very well. And then last year, more time in the American League than he would have liked. He's like, it was a lot. And that's the term he used. It was a lot. And I just wonder if at some point, because it's been a lot, maybe a change of scenery does end up, because I'm with you. Like, this is a player that looked like he was knocking on the door to be an everyday impact defenseman in the NHL. When he made the team at a camp in 2018, and when he jumped in 6 or 7 months later to that playoff series against Colorado,
yeah,
like, this guy is ready to go. And then the injury happened. And it really, and then the world changed. He missed the entire season of 1920, an entire season that kind of coincided with the world changing for 2 years, and now here we are. So maybe a mental change of scenery is important, because all of the things that are tied to what has gone on the last couple of years could be tied to Calgary. I think, you know, I wonder about Arizona as an interesting spot for him, because I think there'd be opportunity there. They could be a team that maybe does, because he's got the pedigree, because we've seen him be good in the past, maybe they're a team that would be interested in a waiver wire claim or something like that, or a trade at some point. I don't know. I wonder about the change of scenery with a player like that. And yet, I also think there's still a lot of potential with the young man, even with Calgary. I know others don't agree, and I get that, and it was not a great outing on Tuesday. Here's a real good opportunity for him to have a good outing against a good team and playing with a different D partner as well.
You're right in the sense that there's some untapped potential there, because we've seen it in glimpses, and now, is it a trade-off where he's been set back by these injuries and the lack of playing time? I think he's only played about 130 games over the course of the last three or four seasons, so not a lot of in-game time for him. The pairs tonight are going to be Mackey and Stone, Valimaki and Milosh. Is it reading too much into? I know between you and I and the conversations we've had, we've really liked Connor Mackey, and I think it's fair to say he's probably number one on our chart. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, I think so. If I, especially because of the waiver status and he's under contract, I think he'd be number one for me in terms of making the roster.
So am I reading too much into thinking that Mackey and Stone might be the number one left shot and the number one right shot, and Valimaki and Milosh have to do a little catch up? Or where are you on the Milosh versus Stone debate, if we just want to talk about right
shot?
I
actually think Milosh might be ahead because of what Eric just told us earlier this hour, his article about, you know, the Eric Gudbranson conversation and going and watching tape of Gudbranson and all that type of stuff. That's a real good revelation from Francis and Milosh. And so I wonder if that puts him ahead. The fact that he has a contract and Stone doesn't, and it's a one-way deal, and he's waiver eligible, I wonder if Milosh isn't ahead of Stone. And that's not a knock on Michael at all. Just circumstantially, I wonder if Milosh is ahead. And he's had a really good camp. It's not like he's had a poor camp.
Let me get you to put on the GM cap a little bit. So you've got five locks on defense, two spots open. And of the five locks, Uyghur, Tanev, Rasmus are right shots. Zadorov, Hanifin, left shot. So you've got two spots to fill on that blue line. Do you care which way they shoot, or would you go one lefty to bring you up to 3-3 and then be open to either a lefty or righty?
Ideally, I think that you would like to have left-right on all three of your pairings, but with Oliver Shillington's situation right now, I don't know if you are in an ideal situation. I don't know. We don't know when Oliver's going to rejoin the team. I think it's going to take some time. I think he needs some time to work through some pretty serious stuff. So, and all the best to him. Like I really, the heart goes out to Oliver, and I hope that he's able to work through it and what's happening in his family and personal life. I really, really do. And that to me is kind of this number one priority above everything else. And then, but while he's not here, I don't know if they're going to necessarily be able to go perfectly left, right, because I don't know, like, do you want Uyghur on the right with Zadorov and then Mackey on the left with Tanev? Shut up, Siri. And then Mackey on the left with Tanev? I don't know if that's the best look for you. So I think you might be looking at needing to go right on one pairing, whether it's Mackey with Anderson, which we have not seen. It's been Hanifin and Anderson the entire camp. Maybe Mackey Tanev makes a ton of sense. I could absolutely see that. And I wonder if Tanev plays a preseason game, I wonder if he plays it with Uyghur on his left side. That's going to be really interesting, and I think it'll be a big indicator. But I think right now, you might have to go with at least one player on their offside.
I really want to see what Uyghur and Tanev look like when Tanev's up full steam ahead. But then you got that situation with, what do you do with that third pairing? And if it's Milosh, then you got Zadorov Milosh on the third pair, but maybe you want somebody a little more veteran in that third pair to sort of shepherd the way. Now, Milosh, he's not a rookie. Like, there's no, oh my goodness, I wonder what he's going to be. He's battle tested. He played 50 games last year for the San Jose Sharks. So he knows what the NHL is all about. There's not so much wonder there. But I do think that Mackey's the front runner to grab one of those two spots. And I'm really curious to see Milosh versus, you know, Milosh does have NHL experience, but the more veteran Stone. The wrinkle is, of course, Stone on a PTO. And, you know, you've laid out the scenario quite well that maybe the AHL only contract for Stone to start and skips waivers by doing that. Maybe that's an option the Calgary Flames and Stone agree upon. But I'm just so curious to see how this defense plays out. And especially tonight, I think it's all due respect to Adam Ruzicka centering the top line, but how Mackey and Stone and Valimaki and Milosh play against Connor McDavid, how they play against Leon Draisaitl, how they handle Evander Kane, all these things when they're getting basically the full meal deal from the Edmonton Oilers. I'm curious to see who rises and who falters.
If I were to go power rankings right now, the two guys that I think are on the team as of right now, in my mind, would be Mackey and Milosh. And then you've got the ability to do something creative potentially with Stone. And then you've got the ability to have Valimaki as an option if he clears waivers, have a good start in the American League. And then what I think Yusso needs is stability, the chance to play, and the chance to play to start. Remember last year, he was kind of in and out, and he wasn't playing a lot. He was a healthy scratch before he went to Stockton. Wherever Yusso's playing, I think having consistent playing time from the start of a season at the American League or NHL level is going to be huge for him. So wherever he starts, and maybe if he's going to be 7 in the NHL, I think having him in the top 4 in the American League, even though you got to go the waiver route, is a really important step for the Flames to take and a really important step for Yusso. So he'd be an option for you in the American League. You could get creative and flexible with Stone and then have Mackey and Milosh on your roster. I could see Zadorov and Milosh. That'd be a mean AF pairing to play against if I'm another team. You know, it's Milosh plays physical. He plays with an edge. He's not quite as big as Gudbranson. Like, Gudbranson's a mountain of a human being. But Milosh is not a tiny human himself. So, and we all know Zadorov is a hulking human as well. So, like, I'm probably not signing up to physically play against those two. I think there's a decent chance Zadorov, Milosh could be your opening day pairing. And Mackey has shown that he can play, or has said that he can play on either side. He feels comfortable on either side. So there's another interesting wrinkle, too.
Yeah, for doing power rankings, I think, and we're in consensus on this, that Connor Mackey is the number one. Maybe I'm just too close to Michael Stone. Like, Michael Stone's one of my favorite guys in that locker room to talk to. Not even on the record, just having a general, normal, human-to-human conversation. So maybe I'm just a little too close to that. But I think Stone Milosh, I think that's the interesting battle on this blue line, if we want to call it a battle. Because I think Mackey, I think you go left-right for 6-7, and it doesn't matter who's the 6 and who's the 7 to start, because I think you'll tinker, you'll flirt with it, you'll see who fits where. So I think there, you're not really concerned about labeling a number 6 and a number 7. And I'm just so intrigued by that right side, because I think you go left, I think you go right. Milosh, one-way contract, Stone, PTO, Stone, more NHL experience. Milosh, you know, the Gudbranson clone. So I really think this is an interesting debate, and I can't wait to see how it unfolds starting Friday against the Edmonton Oilers.
That friggin' Labardius guy has changed my school of thought over the last 48 or 72 hours. When we talked on Wednesday's pregame show, and, you know, Lou made a really, really good point and a good case for, now this is all contingent of Oliver being part of the team, but when Oliver comes back and he's up to speed with what we saw from Uyghur Zadorov on Wednesday, that looked good. Is that an option once everybody's healthy? Now, all of a sudden, you know, Mackey and Milosh aren't as much of a factor. Oliver comes back. You reunite him with Chris Tanev. They were such a dynamite pairing last year. So now you're going Anderson with Hanifin, Tanev with Shillington, Mackey with, sorry, Uyghur with Zadorov. And, you know, you've got the ability to, because again, I think Zadorov's trending towards being an NHL top four defenseman. And maybe not on this team because they're deep. But I think on the way he's trending, I don't think it's crazy to think he'd be playing top four on other teams. So Now all of a sudden you've got three pairings that would be a top four or a top two pairing on most teams around the NHL, and you've got a lot of flexibility in terms of how you play guys. And if you want to, if you need to hammer one guy on the PK and you take nine penalties one night, and one or two of your guys are absolutely gassed because of their penalty killing roles, well, now you've got other options to elevate it 5-on-5. I think that gives you a lot of options, and I've been thinking about that ever since Wednesday, watching those two play together. So that's another interesting wrinkle, but I don't know. And maybe you think about it with Tanev elevating another young guy like Mackey, but just knowing how well Tanev and Shillington played together last year, that is that's been in my head for the last couple of days.
Well, and that configuration gives you three left shot, right shot pairings.
Now you're balanced.
And, I mean, we know Shillington fits with Tanev. We know Rasmus Anderson and Noah Hanifin are a thing. So if you want to explore Zadorov-Uyghur a little bit, like we saw, well, why not give it a go, see how it turns out? Again, if it works well, well, now all of a sudden you can go 20 minutes for each pairing. It won't exactly unfold like that, but you can literally just rotate defense pair after defense pair and be confident in what you have.
He is Aaron Vickers from Daily Hive. He's on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. As we start to wrap things up on hour two of Flames Talk, thank you to Azam and Garrett behind the board on this Friday as well. We would love it if you went and subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. You can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. Go hit subscribe right now.